Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Now, we had a nice discussion about the idea of like double A games when we were in the office before we came into here. Because there's a whole bunch of new stuff that sort of seems to be ticking the boxes of sometimes triple A looking productions and gorgeous visuals, but with a slighter sort of reduced budget overall. And it's just, it's no one's really like labeled this stuff yet, but we kind of go between indie games and triple A, but there's a whole middle, like, you know, load of stuff on the spectrum that we never really talk about.
Well, that's because that middle ground just fell out at like, the dawn of the 2010s, we used to have publishers like THQ occupying that space, and then the publishers just decided, you know what, we're going to have indie games, we're going to have our massive blockbusters, and nothing in the middle. And I think we finally started to see the industry crawl out of that weird paradigm and like get that middle space back.
Because like for me, I was going to, one of my opening sort of things was going to be like, do you think that this generation overall has felt kind of like more manipulative than ever? Like for me, it's, there's kind of been this overarching
big
feel.
Question.
Well, I know, but I think it's kind of like, I don't know, this generation for me has been this overarching feel of, like I said, manipulation and greed and things like that. Like, we're going to like focus on the games, but like the reason that I think these things stand out so much is because they're against the backdrop of, like, especially across the earliest, the last few years kind of thing, a lot of games just being filled with different microtransactions and different sort of setups that make you feel less valued as a consumer.
I'd say it's really refreshing to turn on a game and not find something that's trying to eke your money out of you at the moment. Like, you turn something on, it's like, oh, okay, it's a tight little story, tight little this, tight little that. It's all just designed around one big chunk of gameplay and nothing else, no microtransactions, no anything else. It's very much like, ah,
this is how games used to be.
That's notable. Like, it's weird that becomes the norm so easily. All of the greedy, like, give us all your money sort of, like, where they act.
And it is weird that we end up sort of saying, like, I'm so glad to just have a game that I can finish in a few hours that, like, has a nice set of game mechanics, a nice set, like, a nice structure, and it's really rewarding, and I can talk about the story, and it's not, like, 300 hours long with a loot system.
Genuinely, playing Control over the weekend and finishing it over the weekend was a joy I thought I had vanished from the gaming world.
It's like there's so few and far between. We have got a rundown of some games. Now, most of these are brand new, are sort of newer things that have come out from the last few weeks or whatever. But a really notable turning point for the industry, I think, was Hellblade, was, you're going through it at the minute, Ash.
I finished it a little while back.
Good. But, yeah. So, like, yeah, that was Ninja Theory. Their whole mission statement with that game was that they wanted to prove that you could do a AAA game with an indie budget. And so I think it's developed and published both by them. I forget exactly what the budget was, but it was notably less than what you'd associate with the vast majority of AAA stuff. So we can just talk about Hellblade for a bit. I think especially visually, it's absolutely stunning. I love that they put a photo mode in it, so you can just sort of like make the most of all the different visuals and everything. But it has such an indie soul. Like, it's so just all about Senua's whole journey, but her dealing with psychosis and losing it, you know, kind of losing her mind, trying to figure out what's going on with her tribe and everything. But what do you guys think?
Everything you just said is really, really good. In that, I think it does sort of differentiate itself. When you look at it, it looks gorgeous, and especially the facial technology that they use and implement, like the way they bring those performances to life, is so kind of cutting edge and really, really revelatory. But at the same time, it really is a sort of indie game. You know, obviously it was made with a small budget. Like, they published it themselves, as far as I know. And it's in contrast to what you expect an indie game to be, because I think as the years have gone on and indie games have become more successful, indie games are kind of defined more by their aesthetic than they are sort of production sort of specifications or criteria. Like, you can look at an indie game, and if it's 2D, it's got a lush art style, you will say that's an indie game, even if it might have funding from a major player. So I think when it comes to like these AA games, especially Hellblade, it's sort of, it's a good example of how it kind of draws the line between what you expect from an indie title, but also what you expect from a proper AAA blockbuster, because it looks like one and it plays like one, but also it doesn't. It doesn't have that same mentality. It's telling a story. It's very focused. It's a very interesting, weird game that doesn't do everything right, but has a lot of soul.
But it's like you said, for the indie label, like for the longest time, if someone said indie, it just meant pixel platformer.
Yeah.
Which, like, for the longest time, it was me screaming at you to buy stuff. Now I've got 4K. I want the HD things. Celeste, just play Celeste. Matt, what do you make of Hellblade? Because you've been through it recently out of us.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Hellblade. I think it still stands up. It's only been a couple of years old, isn't it? It's not massively old.
But
I think it stands up fantastically. Again, as this whole double A thing really pops me because it just sounds like batteries. But like, I feel
they were the best batteries, to be fair.
Yeah, they are. They're so useful. Yeah. They're versatile. And it's the same way as these games as well, you know? Segue back into that.
Good.
The Hellblade was, it's a lovely game. And like Josh said, it has loads of soul, has loads of heart. It has something to say. It feels like a game that is trying to tell you something and teach you something as you're going through it, rather than capitalize on the experience in a different way that like AAA games can do with microtransactions and with like a whole paying aspect. And they've spent years and years and years making something massive and sprawling and huge, and you can get lost in that. Whereas this, I feel like, had a very driven, pointed way of delivering its narrative that meant something as much as it did enjoying the experience.
I think like it kind of like it highlights like how much value there is in a good story. Like I think a lot of people absolutely love something like Spider-Man or God of War. Like, obviously they're in the AAA space, but like God of War's story is so nuanced, and it takes like, you know, it plays its cards really carefully, and like you really do fall back in love with Kratos, and you love the journey that he's on. And it's like that's more of a rarity though. If you go back across the last few years, like it's hardly, you know, you can hardly think of any sort of major AAA games that have really meaningful stories behind them.
Yeah.
Whereas like these games in this kind of new space we're sort of exploring, like nearly all of them have meaningful stories.
Well, I think there was a podcast last week about the potential pitfalls of trying to make a really good story in like an open world. And I think as this generation has embraced kind of sandboxes and these games as service models where a game is supposed to last forever, like that runs antithetical to the idea of a story having a conclusion in itself. So when you do get these games like Hellblade that have come out and they're focused so firmly on telling a story and storytelling, the fact that you have a beginning, middle, and end, that structure in place just lends itself, in my opinion, better to better storytelling. Even though I love the likes of God of War or Spider-Man, and they tell really kind of amazing, heartbreaking, emotional stories, it's separated between chunks of, you know, lore and mythology that might not be as interesting, or gameplay loops that, you know, go on for a bit too long, or missions that, you know, just feel like you're checking a box and not really progressing everything. It's kind of broken up in a way that I think a lot of these games we're going to talk about just kind of aren't. Like a lot of AA games for me are kind of, I can kind of identify them by the way they focus on one really interesting point and they want to bring that to life using mechanics. It's not just a bunch of stuff thrown together. As good as that may be, I'm going to once again talk about Days Gone because I can't go on podcasts talking about Days Gone, but to me, that's a bunch of stuff put together. In isolation, they're all really interesting and engaging, but as a whole, it doesn't really coalesce into something meaningful. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think most of the AAA games I've played do that. They might not have, the mechanics might not be as refined, but everything is informing a central part of the experience, and it's all built around one or a couple of key ideas, and they do their best to really realize those within the frameworks or maybe even limitations that they have.
I mean, I think a lot of it like revolves around budget as well. Like I think if you have a way smaller budget and a more focused team, I mean, like that it lets them like stay with like a creative lead the whole way through, as opposed to something that like, because the AAA gaming industry has such a fascination with open world stuff, like this massive platform of content that you can plug DLC into or whatever. And like obviously I'm treating sort of the AAA label as this sort of nebulous label, but we nearly all know what it means.
Yeah.
Like it is
yeah.
those sort of like big labyrinthine 800 hour long things that like you play for a bit and hardly anybody gets all the way through, as opposed to things that become kind of hidden gems over time or whatever that I think is going to like reach the zenith at the minute. There's so many games right now that feel like they exemplify worthwhile titles that aren't overlong and aren't all the same, like the opposite way. They aren't like pixel platformers or things that are really tiny. So another one down is A Plague Tale, which just like kind of blew up all over Twitter, like developed by Asobo, published by Focus Home. And like another thing to clarify as well is that although some of these games have really decent budgets, it's kind of the mentality that goes into them. It's like something like Control looks absolutely gorgeous and stunning and everything, but it's not like, if you ever play Control, like its general mentality is so indie, like it doesn't care about being overtly like three-act structure or whatever. And I think it's kind of the mentality of these games. games that like makes them feel like double A's or whatever. But to stick with the Plague Tale, Josh, you've played way more of it than me.
Yeah, I'm nearing the end. I'm okay. Not quite all the way through it yet, but I have a firm grasp of kind of where it's going, and especially the gameplay mechanics, mm-hmm. which are very similar and based around stealth and puzzle solving and a lot of rats. I'm not going to lie. There are loads and loads of rats. If you don't like rats scurrying around, you're not going to like this game because it is
than a ghost
spooky.
Song.
That's all I know about this game is rats, man. That's
a lot of rats.
Okay, jeez.
But no, I think Plague Tale is a good one. I haven't got to the end of it yet, so I'm not going to make any declarative statements about its quality. I'm really enjoying it. But for me, it kind of wears the potential limitations of AA games on its sleeves. Like right. You can see, especially when it comes to combat and the mechanical focus of it, it's less engaging than the story. And for me, that was the same case with Hellblade. Mm. I think we cut it a lot of slack. I like the combat in Hellblade, but the puzzle solving, it's repetitive as hell, as is finding those symbols around the environment.
Well, you're wrong.
Ash, I liked it as well. No, Ash is wrong.
No, I liked it as well.
I liked it as well, but when you came out of that, and you can prove me wrong, but was like the main focus of Hellblade potentially, like the story and the characters rather than the gameplay? If it's not,
of course it was. No, but I felt like the repetitive gameplay is informative to its theme, which is mental health and that sort of thing as well, though, which is a separate issue, maybe.
You could totally like back up that, like the idea of her being trapped and having the only thing that she has is fighting back against these endless hordes that keep coming. The idea that the combat is a loop and can get to become a grind and whatever. You could argue that that's intentional.
I think it is, especially maybe. Towards the end. There's that one where you get locked in.
Especially the end.
Works really well, but I'd say even with those great themes in mind, I'd say that perhaps you could look at it and say, oh, it's kind of repetitive. Oh, it's kind of it's perhaps maybe the complexity of it. It's very rudimentary. You're doing effectively the same thing over and over again. And yes, it does inform its themes, but when you get to a game like a Plague Tale, you're sort of doing the same thing again. It's like, oh, okay, he's a section with the rats. Okay, he's a section where I have to sneak around dudes.
Oh, they said, oh, he's having sex with the rats. Oh, is what I thought. No. He said.
He's having sex
that's
with
a different
the rats.
Indicator, you know, that we're not going to talk about.
I haven't got to the end of this game yet, so if that's a big spoiler, I don't know. Maybe that's how the game
finishes.
That's
the big supernatural twist. That and that idea, though, of sort of like having like a handful of mechanics and then like repeating them the whole way through and putting the focus on characters or story or themes or like narrative or whatever. Like, I think something like that kind of exemplifies what we're getting at, because like sometimes you do have that where like the budget is reduced and you can see that the devs like managed to, they only have a handful of different mechanics that they've put in there. Like Plague Tale is like, you have the slingshot, you can move a bunch of boxes around, you have the light, like the sort of light mechanics or whatever with moving the groups of rats at a time, and that's mostly it. Like, it kind of repeats the whole way through. But in the same token, like old school games, that means that you focus on the story because you become comfortable with the gameplay and everything else starts to shine alongside it. But in a Plague Tale's case, I still think it's totally worthwhile highlighting as like something that kind of blew up and like, I didn't really see many adverts for it or anything beforehand. I don't know when you guys first heard of it.
Literally,
for me, it was just on random.
Same. Yeah, after the reviews came out, then I was kind of like, wait, what? Yeah. What is this game?
And it's like sometimes, like, because I think a lot of it's really easy. Like, if you look at the industry today and kind of you think like, oh well, there's not a massive amount of money being put into the advertising. This thing's not going to do very well. But I think people do seem to be gravitating towards these experiences. Like something like Man of Medan is in the UK charts. Astral Chain just topped the UK charts, which is just. Things like that are really good to see, because I would assume that without this sort of massive advertising campaign, YouTube adverts and social media pushes
or
whatever.
We're potentially at fault about this as well. But I mean, when it comes to the major AAA blockbuster releases, either they're really good and we get to talk about them and have a lot of fun and that's awesome, or they're kind of bad, but they're usually bad for all the same reasons because they're so homogenous and all games, like not all games, but most games sort of adopt similar formulas or have similar mechanics. You're just kind of talking about the same things over and over again, whereas something like a Plague Tale that has unique mechanics and unique focuses. So even when it kind of like isn't as good, it's still interesting to talk about and pick it apart because it's not like anything else. Whereas if we talk about, I don't know, Far Cry New Dawn or something having the same structure as the previous Far Cry,
the drop rates weren't very good.
It's like,
good
yeah,
again.
The drop rates weren't very good. Microtransactions, we've talked about theirs ad nauseum. So I think it just, even in their failures, potential failures, they're just more interesting.
That's a brilliant way to put it. That even a really naff AA game is still good.
Yeah.
Or it's still fun to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
like
even something like Control, like I have a whole bunch of problems with the last 20 minutes of that game. And it's like, but that is way more interesting and there's more to talk about than Anthem, than anything in Anthem.
Well,
it's like, yeah, I mean, I wrote down like a handful of things that I think have like represented like high profile failures of the likes that you mentioned. And like Anthem, Crackdown 3, Fallout 76, Agents of Mayhem, Sea of Thieves. Like games that, like you said, you could, if I'd nebulously said that like the missions were very, very repetitive and I felt like I was getting the same gear over and over again, that would apply to literally all of those games all at once. Whereas like things like A Plague Tale or Control or Sinking City or whatever, you know, if you have qualms, there's more to pick apart.
I think if you're not putting as much money into them as well, like as in if you can put, like pay £25 for a smaller game and it has those problems, you're a lot more forgiving of it than something you're paying £60 for that you're getting the same thing over and over and over and over again with, whether you like it or not. If you're just putting a little piece in, at least it's more entertaining in that aspect well, which is something that you don't see a lot often because everything is all about money. So it's always really expensive.
That the industry does kind of have an obsession with inflation and growth, where it's okay to just kind of keep doing the stuff that you've been doing, that the things that exemplify why we fell in love with the industry in the first place. Like, give us more games like that. The next one down I've got is Control, and then we'll get onto Sinking City, which is one that Ash finished the other week, I believe. But Control for now is Remedy's new one, which is published by 505 Games, who also did Sniper Elite and Virginia. Virginia is like indie as hell.
It is.
Totally recommend it. But
really good.
It's a bit sprawling. Whoa. It's a very Josh Brown game. But
I don't know what that means, but
it means indie as hell. Okay. Mr. JP is my go-to for any indie film or indie game. But Control, being Remedy's new thing, like they've sort of flirted with like different kind of horror aesthetics and different Twin Peaks or surrealist stuff in the last like their last few games, especially in Alan Wake and some of the TV shows that are in Max Payne. But with Control, as much as it's marketed as this kind of overt action thing, kind of like Die Hard style, it's like she's trapped in this big building and whatever. Like the main sort of like meat of that game is this like supernatural thriller where it doesn't really, once the story's kind of got out of the way, like the whole end game stuff or whatever, it's about living in that space and what that building is and slowly picking apart like the research facility and what was really going on.
Yeah.
Whatever. Like that's the best stuff in there.
For me, Control is one of the most interesting ones on this list because when you look at it, even when you play it, it has all the hallmarks of a regular AAA blockbuster. It doesn't play like a Hellblade. It doesn't play like a Plague Tale.
Anthem wishes it was Control.
It plays so sickly smooth, but like you said, when it comes to the story and the setting and the world, like it's weird as all hell, man. Yeah. It has this, no spoilers, but it has this music video in it. That's one of my favorite things of the year.
Sent me this one.
I said, Scott, as soon as I got to work this morning, he's already seen it, but I just had to share this. Ash, when you get to it, you will laugh uncontrollably because it is amazing. But it is weird, and it just reminded me of how kind of boring a lot of AAA games had come. Like, you wouldn't find that same scene in sort of your major, like A Day Has Gone or something, or it would be like obfuscated.
Yeah, I feel like when AAA games do experiment with weird things, they do it very safely. So like stuff like when you get in Elder Scrolls, Fallout, Red Dead Redemption, the massive open world games that are AAA, like big behemoth titles.
Oh, this divides entire populaces, but I'm going behemoth.
The big games. Basically, when they experiment, it's by the books, isn't it? Like Red Dead Redemption, when it had UFOs, it was like, okay, it's an odd little Easter egg you can find. It wasn't anything like mega in your face weird. Yeah. You had to go out and find it. Like, oh, okay, here's a weird town of like incestuous zombie people or whatever, but they're all still actually a bit normal. Elder Scrolls as well, like with the cannibal people, all fit into their narrative like very, very plainly. I feel like they relied upon the fantastical nature of their world to begin with to not go really out there, whereas when you get a AA game they're really not scared to just absolutely
That's really interesting because
out.
Speaking of aliens and like Rockstar stuff, like stop doing that, the audio people won't know what's going on. But you have to check out the video to find out what we're talking about.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors.
For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But speaking of like aliens and Rockstar stuff, one of the most talked about scenes that in isolation from GTA 5 is the alien encounter bit, which is like the most random thing, but kind of showed Rockstar kind of pushing the envelope and doing something that is a bit more out there. But in Control's case, yeah, like you said, there's a whole music video near the end. There's a whole puppet show in that game that like that you find entire episodes of. And just like they clearly went out of their way to make an, like literally made an entire puppet TV show and then just hid it in TVs all around that game. You know, they have a whole bunch of live action actors that represent the versions that are in the game that you can find different clips of and stuff. There's so much personality in that game. And even like a band like Poets of the Fall that were in Max Payne 2 and have always been in their game since then, they released new music that then got premiered in the game. So it's like, and they kind of break the fourth wall and Poets of the Fall as a band play a role in the Supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, if you liked Remedy or you like games that have like these sort of like signature identifiable personalities, this thing is like the most flamboyant one of them, yeah.
I think that's a key word there, like personality. Mm, I feel like that's very much what defines the indie space. But that, in a lot of ways, has sort of fallen out of the AAA space. Yeah. Like, a lot of games, like I said before, just feel kind of homogenous. And even though the mechanics and the stories might be really good and satisfying, there's that lack of a real sort of kick up the butt, like, creative spark that I think something like Control just has all over it. I think when you have that personality as well, you're sort of more willing to sort of cut it some slack when it comes to the flaws. You kind of
it's like, I see what you were going for.
Them. Yeah, like, I see what you're going for. And you might not have had the sort of resources to achieve it, but you know what? I've had a bloody good time.
You know,
these
my
ideas
butt's
with
been
you.
Kicked.
My butt's been kicked.
At least you went for the thrust. Yeah, I mean, I think, Control's a fascinating thing. Me and Josh and Ben Roy are going to do a spoiler cast on the over on the What Culture Gaming channel because you'll be, no, What Culture Gaming podcast
That's
channel. Because you'll be listening to this on the regular channel if you're watching the video anyway. So you can come back for that. But the next game down is Sinking City, which I know nothing about. I know that it's published by Big Ben.
Yes, it
tell
is
us things, Ash.
I haven't finished it, but I haven't.
What the hell?
I'm going to say that right now because it's massive and it gets things wrong. It gets things wrong because it gets very repetitive. The way that it runs you, it's like running through treacle trying to get all over the city. The ideas it has, though, are fantastic. Like the whole H.P. Lovecraft horror world. You're a detective, you go into this little horror-y Lovecraft city. Mm-hmm. There's the Innsmouth of fish people, and then there's this other family called the Throgmortons, which are like gorilla people.
Great name.
And they're kind of like have this all this tension about that that's going on, and you've got to sort it out and realize why everyone's having these strange visions and like weird images coming to them, hallucinations. Everyone's a bit mental running around the island. So you've got to go and figure out what's going on, how it's happened, and how it's got to this sort of state, whilst you're also suffering from really weird nightmares about eldritch horrors coming to try and eat you and stuff.
The worst horrors, to be fair.
Yeah, honestly. Eldritch horrors, no thank you. But the whole game premise itself is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And the way that it is drawn from H.P. Lovecraft's work and turned it into like a livable environment, as well as critiqued the more like less savory elements of his work as well, is a fantastic way that they've done it. But there is problems with it. But I'd forgive it so much because of
it's trying.
Yeah, because of the AA space that we're talking about here. I feel like I was very much like in love with the way that it did everything and that it tried and that it's got all of these different things that it wants to offer up. So like investigation is about pinning things on the map yourself. Like it doesn't tell you where to go or what to do. You have to figure it all out, like be a proper detective and all that sort of thing. And then enter these like weird portals where you can see the past and crime scenes, that sort of thing, and figure out what's going on through ghosts walking through your path and all that sort of stuff. So like, the way that it tries to tell its story and how weird it gets is it's just excellent. It's just not something yeah. you see every day. Like, it's, but you're playing it is very much like, okay, geez, all right. Like, everything's, it's not a horror game in the same way that it tries to scare you. It just tries to take you so far out of your comfort zone and plop you into something that you're unfamiliar with, that it plays through, like, creepy, dread, sort of slow-burning sort of thing. Sorry,
I feel like a lot of people, like, know the name of the Sinking City as well. Like, they seem to have done quite a good job sort of getting it out there and at least get people talking. I think in terms of, like, a budgetary sense as well, like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of curious as to how much, because Epic Games like made their Unreal Engine free. Like it was like, okay, this is, you can just use this stuff and you can start developing stuff. I don't know if I don't think Sinking City was made using the Unreal Engine, but I think that like the amount of Unreal stuff that suddenly got out there kind of elevated the whole genre.
Yeah,
like this is kind of an indie game, but it still looks like it's up there, and that sort of helps with people wanting to give it a shot.
Well, I suppose it's what you sort of saw on Steam with Unity and stuff, where you saw like these games that had like pretty decent production values suddenly pop out, and anyone could essentially make a game that at least looks like really stellar and professional. I mean, a lot of them were bad, but also some of them were good, and I think there's like a sort of a potential level playing field now that just wasn't there back in the day, where these AA games now are just more viable because of the technology that they have kind of on display. In the Sinking City, I've only played like a couple hours of it, but I was surprised at how kind of robust it was before. Even when you were talking to me about it, I just expected kind of your run-of-the-mill AA game where it's about this cool story, you've got detective elements and you're just sort of uncovering it. Then I realized, oh, hang on, there's combat, and hang on, you've got this kind of weird sandbox to explore, and it's really actually quite long, and it had way more to it than I perhaps initially expected.
I think that stuff's really cool. I like the idea that like all of this stuff kind of helps with that the expectation that the average consumer has, or at least in the eyes of the industry, that every game needs to be this big 4K extravaganza thing with amazing facial animation and whatever. Like, you know, chances are if you've been playing games for a few years, then you're not coming to it for the window dressing, you're coming for literally everything else. And those like those main game mechanics can make up for, you know, maybe like a bad running mechanic or whatever, but
I feel like the one place that the Sinking City fell down in this weird like liminal space we're talking about is that it tried too hard to hit the AAA market, because it tried to make itself like an open world, and it should have stuck to its linear roots, because all the stuff in there where you're just doing the story is really good. It doesn't need it. The side missions are perfunctory, like they're not really necessary, so it doesn't need side missions, it doesn't need all these different areas that are like massive because you can't get to them because they're ages away, you've got to run with your man doing a horrible run the whole way. But if that's kind of where it tripped up, was trying to reach a bit too far for AAA, which I feel like is a pressure on games that they don't they don't have to do. And I feel like seeing all of the positives of that game and of other games we've spoken about, like Control and Man of Medan as well, and all that sort of thing, they do it so well, just going, okay, here's the linear story, here's all the things we like, here's all the experimental stuff, let's just keep it at that.
Yeah, I mean, so many devs have said, like, once you go open world, you don't go back kind of thing. And it's like, oh, once we've realized we can map our game to this open world, people will play it for longer. That means that they're engaged longer, yada, yada. But I think that over time, especially this generation, has kind of opened it back up for linear-focused experiences again. And then the linear stuff has become the breath of fresh air again, which, like, for me, is more than welcome.
It's weird, though, isn't it? Like, how that's happened. Now you go back to sort of something like even Control, which is relatively straightforward. It seems like a breath of fresh air. It seems like they're doing something new when really they're just kind of re-embracing structures and genres that used to be popular in the norm, essentially.
It's we're gradually or quickly running out of time, but I do have a handful more things. Astral Chain, I'll mention this quickly because it was published by Nintendo, but the general feel of Astral Chain, it's Platinum's new action game, feels like this isn't meant in the best way possible. It feels like a PS2 game. And like, I mean that in
this,
like,
is the thing, AA games feel like PS2 games, the best one.
And it's like that, like mid, like that, like the PS2, the Xbox, like the mid-2000s, the really lovable stuff that was the right balance between, you know, like some creative, like pitching an idea and it not like having to cost the earth to bring it to life, but giving it enough money to bring it to life and letting us play it kind of thing. Astral Chain is like, just doesn't play like anything else. It's all about using the right analog stick to like move your character or move this demon thing that you can summon around enemies, and then you sort of do face button attacks after that and whatever. But a lot of the combat's done using the triggers and the right analog stick and things like that. And it's just like, it would be too risky for someone like an EA or an Activision to invest in, but Nintendo obviously are a bit more playful with their money. But I think that the overall look of that game is so, like, it is kind of de-resed. It's cel-shaded. It's quite blocky. There's not really any facial animation. It's just solid character models. And those things, like, allow it to have more fun with its gameplay mechanics. And that's one of the things that I adore about it. Like, playing through it, I was like, this, like I said, it feels like a PS2 game in a way that I didn't realize I missed.
Yes.
And it's like, a lot of the games do that, where it reminds you of things that you used to adore. Like I said, reasons you fell in love with the industry in the first place.
Well, it's sort of similar, I guess, because it's Platinum Games still, but Nier Automata, when that came out last year or the year before, I think 2017. That sort of even though Square Enix published it, you could tell they kind of had...
2018, I lied. Did I? I don't know.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I'm trying to correct myself. I don't know anymore.
The time is ticking down and we just don't know what's happening anymore. Even though it was published by Square Enix, like, you could tell they didn't really have much faith in the product. Even they've admitted, like, we had no idea it was going to sell so much, become so popular. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's because it embraced those same principles and philosophies that, you know, we love about AAA stuff. It felt kind of like a throwback. Mechanically, it was solid, but nothing spectacular. But it had such great ideas and such a great setting and great characters and great sort of just a great realization of its own sort of themes and ideas that people gravitated towards it, and then it sold like hotcakes. Mm-hmm. And now suddenly Nier is this kind of major big franchise.
It's like a known quantity.
It's like, how has that happened?
Well, it was like mentioned alongside Breath of the Wild and everything else. Yeah. It was like, okay, like Nier is like a known thing. Yoko Taro is going to do the next Final Fantasy, which is like the biggest step up ever from anyone in the history of gaming, which is pretty good. the last couple, first one is Blair Witch, which I haven't played yet, but I know Josh has. I don't know if you guys both
on
have.
The list. It's on my list.
Okay. Because like, this is the general sort of like setup for Blair Witch, is that it's made, or it's published by Aspyr, made by Bloober Team.
Yes.
I love the word Bloober as well.
Well, Bloober Team have been sort of been, they've had success in this space for a while now. They did the Layers of Fear games. Mm. I think they did Observation. Now they've done this, which is like a big licensed title. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, again, it has sort of the jank that we've come to expect from games in this sort of realm.
From PS2 games.
But you're from PS2 games. But at the same time, it does have like a weird ambition at the heart of it that, again, it gives it a lot of personality. And they know how to do horror really well. They're well versed in this genre. So, like, mechanically, you're in for a really sound experience, and from a structural perspective, it really flows well. It's just, again, it like it has a ambition that I just gravitate towards, even though it doesn't always, it aims for the sky and doesn't quite get there.
There's something about these games as well, like they seem more open for getting put on like PS Now and games and Game Pass and stuff.
Yeah,
like they're more, they don't need to recoup massive, ridiculous budgets, so they can just be played and more frequently. Like something like Blair Witch is just on Game Pass from day one, which is like, you know, like a godsend. And the thing we can end on is Man of Medan, which is the new one from Supermassive Games.
Yeah,
and that is published by Bandai Namco, but I feel like Man of Medan's overall budget seems nowhere near what Until Dawn was, or its general level of polish isn't what Until Dawn was.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Have you played a bit of it?
No, I've just seen it like be played, but it's just like the like I remember when Until Dawn was getting advertised, and it was like, okay, we have Hayden Panettiere and dude who
has Iceman as Sean Ashmore.
Sean Ashmore.
He doesn't do anything. Dude. He hasn't done anything since Quantum Break.
Hey, Iceman.
He hasn't. But Mr. Robot was in Bloomin' Until Dawn.
Yeah, but he wasn't. What? No, what? Sean Ashmore is a good man.
Oh, he's good. I just think he's cheap. I'm pretty sure you could afford him. We could get Sean Ashmore in.
Whoa. Ridiculous claims at the end of this video.
I'm going to message Sean Ashmore. He's not a big dude. He's not costing the budget.
Get him on our podcast. He can host it instead of you.
Sean Ashmore is a big dude.
Yeah.
He's Ice. Oh, anyway.
He was Iceman 10 years ago.
Oh my God, that's still important and special.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's just the game any good.
Yeah, Sean Ashmore's really good in it, actually. But yeah, no.
Who's that?
Right, so Man of Medan, again, another Reach for the Skies kind of trips a bit along the way. It's 3 to 5 hours, so it's not very long at all, which is what took me aback at first. But like the way that it focuses on it more focuses on like facial animations and making characters very believable, because it's like all motion capture sort of thing. So the way that it's experimented is more towards the visual side, I'd say, than its gameplay, because it knows what its gameplay is from doing Until Dawn, so it's the same again there. But I feel like that's another great AA experimental game that if you just want to dip into, that kind of takes all of the heart of Telltale and old like narrative, choose your own adventure, storybooks and that sort of thing, and spins it into something modern and accessible at a good price range. And it's not perfect, but it has lots of things to praise in it. Like the narrative itself is great. Mm-hmm. Like it's a really good story. It toys with what's real, what's not, and all that sort of thing. The actors that it's got in are also great, like Sean Ashmore.
Who else has it got in?
I don't know the other
people. Good.
But Sean Ashmore's in it and he's important. So.
AAA actor, Sean Ashmore.
But... this is a AA actor, but he's important. But the way that it plays with choice, branching narratives, it has this whole heartbeat mechanic where, like, in Until Dawn, it's about staying still and using the touchpad and that sort of thing. Like, I feel like that played with the way that you use controllers really, really well. This one kind of takes long, and you have to do heartbeat matching. So someone's walking around the corner, ba-doom, ba-doom, and you have to go, ba-doom, ba-doom. Otherwise, they catch you and like, oh, I can hear your heart beating out of time.
You do. Because that was the sort of thing I was getting at with the budget stuff. Is like, because I felt like when Until Dawn came out, it was this big, like, AAA PS4 exclusive, and it had all the Sony marketing and everything behind it. Whereas Man of Medan, like, just doesn't really seem to be getting anything close to the same push.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's because they've put more of their budget into the game itself, or the production overall was reduced, or
I don't know anything really about like how they've tackled things since Until Dawn. But obviously, after that game came out, they worked on a lot of VR titles for Sony titles, which were more smaller scale experiences, and it kind of feels like Man of Medan might be somewhere in between those titles and a proper full-fledged like Until Dawn sequel. So I guess it would sort of still,
They did a whole bunch of like random first-person shooter type stuff, which I would have hoped would then funnel back into Man of Medan. But then Man of Medan is still kind of split across a bunch of episodes.
It doesn't have like combat or anything. It has like some like a couple of like smack mechanics, but that's about it. But yeah, no, it does feel like Until Dawn light is probably how the best way of describing it. It's like it feels like it's taken a step back from what Until Dawn was. It's upped all the visuals, but taken a step back. In like the every other sense, but that it's going to come biannually and have so many installments to it. It can only get better, and where it's going to go is a lot more exciting and a lot more reason to invest in it. And I feel like the long running narrative that can come from this sort of title with this sort of budget and that is this accessible on the price range it's on is something the industry needs and room for improvement as well that we'll continue to see. Whereas AAA games, it's like as big, as brash, as loud as possible, and then how can we make it like 4K graphically incomprehensible? Oh my god, my eyeballs have exploded, rather than looking at everything else.
Plus, like, you wouldn't even get a game like this from any of those like big AAA publishers. They wouldn't even greenlight it. It's not something that would make the mass return or whatever. Whereas, like I said, reducing the sort of production overall and getting Mr. Ashmore in means that they can get it out without running the risk of annoying a bigger tier developer or a publisher or whatever. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below. Have you noticed this sort of trend about AA games, and what are some of your favorites? For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye.
And Ash Millman.
Goodbye.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.